With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
It's Wild Wild Pest, the deep dive podcast about the South's most notorious outlaws.
Palmetto Pete and his posse were the nastiest cockroaches you could ever fear to meet.
Nope.
Trespassing, loitering, scaring innocent folk when they turned on the light.
No thanks.
And that's not to mention all the diseases the germ-ridden no-good-nicks were known to spread.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. But fear not. Terminix was on the case with all the skills, experience, and tools needed to outdraw the outlaws. Learn more at TrustTerminix.com.
Impact of Influence, the tragic story of a powerful South Carolina family and the mysterious deaths they are linked to.
Richard Ellis Murdoch, if that is your name, please raise your right hand. Do you waive reading of the indictments?
Yes, sir.
What say you, Richard Ellis Murdoch, are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand indicted?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
Thank you.
There you have it. That's what happened at Ellis Murdoch's hearing on July 20th. And we're going to discuss that in detail. I am Matt Harris, Seton Tucker on location. She was at the bond hearing. We are always grateful, my friend, that you have decided to spend time with us. You can reach out to us, thoughts, comments, ideas. MurdochPodcast.com, Murdoch Podcast on Facebook, and Matt Harris Podcast at gmail.com. So you went back to your old stomping grounds in the low country or on vacation, and you took time out of your vacation, your family vacation, which is really dedicated to go to Ellis Murdoch's bond hearing today. And let's set the stage. What time did you get there?
Actually, they opened the courtroom at 8 a.m. We arrived, I think, about 8:15, and it was mostly media there. I did not see any family members, very little people from the community as well, but lots of media.
Now, let me ask you something. You told me last night that you had made a call and you were able to get great seats. You were sitting in one of the jury boxes, correct?
Yes. So I called the Colleton County Clerk of Court yesterday and told her who I was. And she was actually in a meeting and she did call me back. She was a very gracious woman and said that they do have some reserved seating for media, and which was the grand jury box. So I was able to sit
right there
pretty much in a row. And I was probably 2 feet away from Ellis when he walked into the courtroom and, you know, got to see some conversations that were being had between the defense and plaintiff's attorneys before the hearing. You could witness them chatting.
It was great because your smiling face was on the live feed almost the entire time. I didn't want to tell you at the time because I thought you'd be very worried about that, but you were right there.
I did have a lot of people reaching out saying they were seeing me on the news, and Court TV was doing a live stream. So people did say that, and it did make me uncomfortable.
And you went with an attorney.
Yes, my dad took time away from vacation, and he actually traveled with me.
That's great. That's great.
To a hearing.
What a bonding vacation, going to a double murder bond hearing. Give me your impression of Ellis Murdoch when you first saw him.
Well, when I was waiting for the hearing to begin, it didn't begin till 10, and we again got there about 8:20. I had seen some media pictures that were posted of Ellis entering the jailhouse, and he was wearing a blue jumpsuit. But when he came out, he was wearing khaki pants and a white button-down shirt. He looked a lot thinner. He looks like he's aged some over the last year. He is very much thinner than he was. His hair was very short, almost shaven. His appearance was drastically different than the pictures that you see in media.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I thought. He was very gaunt. And part of that look of being thin was probably the fact that he's maybe had been wearing his old clothes because his pants looked pretty cinched, and the hair, the famous red hair, was cut off. You know, not that anybody's feeling sorry for the fact that he lost weight, but I just want to set the scene for that. And as he's coming in, was there any kind of noticeable reaction? I mean, it was mostly media, so they are, you know, hardcore to these kind of things. But was there any kind of reaction when he came in?
No, there was no real reaction. I mean, a lot of people were taking pictures, and there was also no reaction from him. He kept a very stony face the entire time.
Now, he had a mask on when he first got there, but then at some point when he was seated at the desk with Harpootlian and Griffin, he did take it off. So he, as we heard at the beginning, pleaded not guilty. We're going to break this down for you even more. Before we get to some clips from the hearing, though, Seton, you also said it was weird because you saw like a painting or a picture of Alec's relative.
Yeah, so but there was a portrait of Buster Murdoch Sr. displayed in the courtroom. I actually took a picture and we'll post it on our Facebook page. And that just, how far someone has fallen from grace just kind of really struck me that he's being arraigned in a courtroom that has pictures of his family members.
His grandfather. Yeah, that's crazy. And also the place where you were brought it full circle for us.
Yeah, this is actually where we filmed part of the Oxygen special. We were sitting in this very courtroom doing our interviews with Tori Roberts.
In fact, we were sitting at the table where Alec Murdoch and Griffin and Harpootlian were today. So, as you said, this year, a year later, not even, it's a real circle. We were talking about him. Did he do it? Did he not do it? And all those things at the table that he's seated at. And now he's facing these murder charges.
Really surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get started on the charges. This is the actual charges being read in the court.
State versus Richard Alec Murdoch. He has been indicted by the Colleton County Grand Jury on July 14th. 2022 for four charges. Those charges are 2022 GS-15-592. That charge is for the murder of Maggie Murdoch. 2022 GS-15-593. That is for the murder of Paul Murdoch. 2022 GS-15-594. That is possession of a firearm during commission of a violent crime for the murder of Maggie Murdoch with a rifle. And 2022 GS-15-595, that is possession of a firearm during commission of a violent crime for the murder of Paul Murdoch with a shotgun.
So what was really interesting to me about this was I was talking to a reporter, and she was telling me it's not usual to read charges in this manner. She's attended a lot of bond hearings, and that this is how Dick Harpootlian has requested it to be done, but this is not typical.
John Snyder, our legal analyst, and he's a former district attorney and a former defense attorney. John, can you expound on that it's not usually done that way?
So I think because of the extraordinary the case leading up to what are the gravest, the most serious charges, I think a lot of this is departing from the standards. And in this case, you have Harpootlian and the prosecution agreeing to a gag order right off the bat. What you're seeing right now is each side of the criminal process doing their best work. And so any deviation is going to be scrutinized, analyzed, talked about by us and many thousands of others. And so they want to make sure they do this the right way and in a way that gives no one any room to complain or say that they didn't get a fair process.
I want to point out that the voice you heard was Assistant Attorney General Creighton Waters. The Attorney General Alan Wilson is on vacation.
Okay, so I kind of wanted to backtrack because we've actually gotten a lot of questions on our Facebook page. Before the hearing started, Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin were talking to the attorney general's office, and they were kind of, you know, chatting. And a lot of people were like, why are they talking? Is this kind of normal for attorneys to do this? Because this is actually the first bond hearing I've ever attended.
There's supposed to be collegiality among members of the bar and members of, you know, parties in a lawsuit. You are not supposed to be screaming at each other the whole time. You're not, like, it's counterintuitive. Now, that doesn't mean either side is not going to be doing their best to achieve what they are supposed to for their client, but it is a level of professionalism that is part of the calling of being an advocate and being involved in criminal litigation.
I would have to assume that Dick Harpootlian and Creighton Waters have worked together and against each other and have known each other for a while. You have to imagine that Dick Harpootlian knows the assistant attorney general, right, John?
Again, smaller state, but even in bigger states, after a while, you just kind of run into the same people if you're doing the same kind of litigation all the time. So Harpootlian certainly is no stranger to the South Carolina Attorney General's office. And it's, again, this is high, high stress stuff that we're dealing with. Somebody's daughter and mother has been murdered. Somebody's son and brother and nephew has been murdered. And so there's a lot of stress that goes in with that. And so being mean beforehand doesn't really help with the stress that is a part of these cases.
I want to point out one thing, and that is, you may not know listening, is Dick Harpootlian is also a state senator. So, you know, he's walking around the Columbia Capitol, and I'm sure he's running into Creighton Waters and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so one thing, it did appear, because they mentioned this later on in the bond hearing, that they were kind of discussing their objections and the things that they were going to be bringing up in this bond hearing and deciding on whether they agreed or disagreed on those things.
So before you give your answer, John Snyder, I want to play a clip from the hearing from Dick Harpootlian, Alec's attorney.
Your Honor, we're consenting to no bond. He's, as you know, already has a $7 million bond he can't make. And the further discussion of the alleged facts in this case in an open courtroom, we think, continues to run the risk of polluting the jury pool, which in a moment I think we can talk about a speedy trial in this matter, which will occur in this courtroom. So we don't believe there's any reason to go into any factual background. He's agreeing to no bond. And so we can move into the more procedural motions that we have. And I think we actually worked out an agreement on all the motions. So if we could do that, Your Honor.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
So to your point, Seton, they have agreed on things. So John, your thoughts?
Well, let's start with the fact they've agreed to no bond, which means there is no bond hearing, which means there is no recitation of fact or evidence presented related to what bond would be appropriate. And so this is Harpootlian kind of keeping more facts from getting out about the case. This is the state realizing that the less that gets out pre-trial, the better for any post-conviction appeals or allegations of unfair trial conducting. So what you're seeing is unusual in both the defendant has agreed to not have a bond be given. He's foregoing his right to a bond in the double murder case. The other motions are all kind of standard pretrial motions in criminal law, and it sounds like Harpootlian and the assistant attorney general have worked together to kind of go through the checklist of motions and reach consent agreements on all of those. And that's not abnormal, in fact.
What would a normal bond hearing play out like if the guy didn't waive his bond hearing? Would the state say this is what happened and how it happened?
Yes, it would be very similar to the financial crime cases where we learned all sorts of salacious details about the financial transactions that led to the indictments that led to a $7 million bond being set. And so if you think about all the coverage that we gave and others gave to what came out during those hearings, imagine now it's in a double homicide that involved your wife and your youngest son.
So there was a lot of talk about gag orders and keeping stuff sealed and not trying it in the media. So let's hear what the attorneys have to say about this.
Well, Your Honor, you know, there's a few motions I know that Mr. Harpootlian and I have discussed. One of the first motions that has been discussed is a gag order. The state has no objection to a gag order. Mr. Harpootlian discussed it with me, and we do agree that would be appropriate in this matter given the amount of media attention. This case, as I've been saying all along at various bond hearings along the way, needs to be tried in the courtroom, and so the state has no objection to that.
You have thoughts on that, John?
Yes. The gag order makes sense due to the international coverage that this case is getting. It also is consistent with a prosecutor wanting to make sure that the defense counsel isn't out there creating their own jury bias through comments they're making while the prosecutor is bound by the rules of professional conduct over what they're allowed to say pre-trial. So this is actually in my heart leaning towards the prosecutor, this is a good thing in a case that's this high profile.
Next clip is from Dick Harpootlian calling out the leaks.
Secondly, we propose that all motions in this matter, either filed by the state or by us, be sealed and subject to a motion by either party to unseal it. But that rather, again, I mean, we're put in the position of filing a motion on discovery to discuss what we've been given and what we haven't been given. And again, this is going to force us to disclose matters to the general public that we don't really want to discuss in public because we're trying to get a fair trial for our client, not try it in the media, but try it in this courtroom. And I believe Mr. Waters agrees with that.
John, when they say sealed, that means that it won't be public record, obviously, right?
That is what it means. And so this is highly unusual. And as soon as this order gets entered, my guess is that national media outlets will be filing motions to have it set aside.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, the media is going to really fight this because that means that we are not going to get any information until it actually goes to trial.
Well, in any other case, when somebody files a motion, it is public record. And so this consent order, if signed by the judge, would then mean that it gets immediately unpublished to the public. And then if the public wants it, they have to file a motion to see what it is. And that is not consistent with standard criminal process. And I don't like that because it undermines general proceedings. It undermines the public's right to know. And it undermines what is every other defendant that's ever been charged with a crime in South Carolina has had to deal with. So this particular defendant shouldn't get anything different than what everybody else gets.
So the judge did seem to question that a little bit, and Harpootlian kind of backtracked and then said something like, well, we should get advance notice if there's going to be evidence in something. So again, is this normal? This is, you know, they have to get a preview of if they're filing something with the court, the attorney's general office would need to give that to Harpootlian before so they could make objections.
Or vice versa. And also, John, they said they'll have 48 business hours to decide if the motion should be sealed.
Look at me. I'm special. Give us special treatment. I don't think any other defendant in South Carolina has been given that chance, and I don't know that this one should be given that either. I understand their concern. I understand that they're doing their job, but this guy is accused of double homicide, and he deserves to be treated like anybody else in South Carolina that's been charged with double homicide. He is nothing special, and they shouldn't be in the courtroom asking for extra special treatment because it's just because it's them. You know, it's too bad that this is a famous case, but what this guy did was famously bad, according to these indictments.
Well, so let's get back to these leaks. I mean, Harpootlian is wanting to shut these down with all effort. So let's listen to what he has to say about it.
I want to make it clear, there's no indication whatsoever that Mr. Waters has in any way made any extrajudicial statements prior to today. But anyone that reads this constant churning out there, it would appear somebody is. It's not him. As far as I know, none of his agents. But we want, if that's violated, we'd like to be able to come before the court and have the court inquire how this material fact got out to see if sanctions are necessary. So to be a gag order is to any extrajudicial statements.
So Harpootlian wants to stop leaks, but he also wants sanctions if more leaks come forward.
Have you ever heard of that kind of thing, John, before? And have you seen anybody prosecuted or had sanctions against them for leaks?
No, I mean, coming from a guy that's famous for talking to the media, it's funny that he's that way now. But look, I understand his desire. I understand that, you know, the mountain of evidence that the state has may seem rather tall climb for him, even as gifted a defense lawyer as he is. But a lot of this is just bluster in a courtroom setting, asking people to do the job that they've already sworn to do and that a court will take very seriously if they violate their sworn duty.
So the next thing we want to go to in the last clip is Dick Harpootlian asking for the speedy trial. Here's that conversation.
And that is we filed a motion for speedy trial. We note that there are two terms here, one in October and one in November, and we'd like to go ahead and get this matter before the Collier County jury as quickly as possible. Mr. Murdaugh does this for a number of reasons. One, as you've heard, he believes he's innocent. He avers he's innocent. And two, he believes that the killer or killers are still at large, and this would allow Sweb to put this behind him and go look for the real killers.
So Harpootlian believes that the killers are still at large, and he's requesting this really speedy trial. So, John, tell us what you think about this.
I think a speedy trial on this matter is great. I think the law enforcement in this case has done an excellent job, and so my guess is that they have everything locked and loaded before they even thought about bringing the indictments. And so when they pulled the trigger on these murder cases, they were ready to go to trial. And so I don't think a speedy trial is a bad thing at all for the state because they were so careful and precise in gathering evidence on the front end of the indictment.
Can I say how OJ-like that was, the hunt for the real killer thing? This was Dick Harpootlian putting that out. This was his showmanship. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, this is reasonable doubt in the making. This is defense lawyer 101, where you say if you think the real killer is going to walk in this courtroom in a second, and any of the jurors' heads turn towards the doorway of the courtroom, then you know that's reasonable doubt. I mean, that's him doing his job, but it is a grand diversion from the fact that law enforcement methodically gathered evidence and brought murder indictments against a former prosecutor and maybe the most famous lawyer in the world right now.
That's so funny. We actually talked about, my dad and I talked about the OJ trial on the way home. We just kept talking about it. We're like, it seemed to be kind of that moment. Now, I will say that Harputlian was saying, we want this to be in 98 to 120 days. They talked about Judge Mullen, who has recused herself. I guess she has a term coming up. He did also mention that there was no other request in Colleton County requesting a speedy trial. So he didn't see why not. The judge said he has to look at the docket and see what's coming up because there's, you know, other trials on the docket. So he wasn't, you know, he wanted to review that before he made any sort of decision on that way. But I want to get back to the evidence. So the prosecution seemed, you know, pretty confident in their evidence of what they said. I'm wondering if this is more circumstantial and if this is going to kind of be an OJ thing. Is this going to be a battle of the experts?
Well, there's only one eyewitness left to the murder, and he's the one accused of it. The two other people that were there at the time both watched in horror as their husband or their father turned a gun on them and ended their lives. And so they won't be available to testify. He has the luxury of being there, and I think Harputlian thinks if he puts this in high gear, maybe the state will overlook something or miss something, or he can say they didn't do enough. But I firmly believe that the state knows how important a case this is for them to win, and they're prepared to move forward and will do an excellent job going forward.
Now, I want to point out that the assistant district attorney says he doesn't want to pick a date yet. He wants to get into this for a few weeks and decide. I think he said January would be aggressive. Where Putin wanted October, but Mullen recused himself. Then it was November. But the DA appears to want to go January. How does it work as far as when the date is picked?
The DA will get to kind of pick what date he wants. And again, the narrative will go from, oh, they were slow to charge my client, and they really don't have the evidence, which is why they're delaying the trial. And what it really is you have to get witnesses subpoenaed, you have to get everybody lined up, you have other cases that are being prosecuted, and you have all these things that you have to do to be ready to go, and he might need a little bit more time than 1 or 2 months.
Well, thank you so much, John, for joining us again. You are a fan favorite. Mm-hmm. Everyone really appreciates all the insight you provide.
Thanks, John.
Well, thank you. And if people want to look at kind of the next thing that we can all wonder about, the death penalty statute in South Carolina is really clear, and a little Google search can tell you a lot about how the death penalty gets implemented in South Carolina.
I did forget to ask you that. When do they decide to use the death penalty?
If they decide to go that route, at the latest, it'll be when the trial starts, but I think that'll be announced before then. But the fact that two people died at one time is one of the aggravating factors that you have to have to bring the death penalty in South Carolina.
We'll dig deep into that in our next episode. Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
Here's something kind of interesting. On July 14th, Google Analytics, people Googled Alec Murdoch over 100,000 times. He was number 10 searched name on that date. It's interesting. So we have a lot to talk about leaks and things that were written in People magazine and The Post and et cetera. And you want to hit that next time, Seton?
Yes, Daily Mail. We have a lot to talk about in our next episode, but I am going to try to get back to vacation.
Yes, that's why she's on the phone, because she's on vacation and working hard on a vacation. And we appreciate it, Seton. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll have her in studio next week. We are grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. MurdochPodcast.com, Murdoch Podcast on Facebook, MattHarrisPodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk soon.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule, history so interesting, it's criminal.
My name is Bill Huffman, and I am a former Cleveland news producer, and I am now the host of the podcast, Who Killed? I began the show focusing on the unsolved murder of Amy Mihaljevic, and now each week I explore a different case with a focus on some of the victims who don't get the attention they deserve. I have a deep catalog of over 225 episodes, so there is a guarantee there will be something for you. Who Killed is an Evergreen Podcast, Killer Podcasts, and Slow Burn Media production. Subscribe today wherever you get your favorite shows.